Welcome to Continued Success, another glorious Friday in the off season with more than no Phillies things to talk about. I am Justin Clue. You can follow me on Twitter at Justin_Clue. With me is Liz Rocher of Yahoo Sports. You can follow her at Liz Rocher. Hey, Liz.
Hey, Justin. How are you?
Bryce Harper won a Silver Slugger probably while I was talking.
Ooh.
How you feel about that?
Yeah, he did win it. That's what the internet's telling me. Second time in his career, he's won a Silver Slugger award. I mean, I feel good about it because he was a very good player this year.
He's certainly silver slugged.
He's certainly silver slugged.
I think we can all agree with that. How do you feel about no playoff teams represented in the MVP conversations in either league?
Hilarious. That's hilarious. Just like, you know what? It's for once, like, the universe can balance things out. The best players in baseball were not on playoff teams this year.
I know.
MLB can't get everything it wants.
You poor guy. You poor fans of playoff teams. Like, what else did you get this year? Oh, right, a postseason run. I forgot.
Yeah. So cram it if you're upset.
Infinitely better than individual awards, I would say. But yeah, that's what the Phillies that's their success this year, racking up those individual awards that they've qualified for. I think we talked about with John on Hittin' Season. I don't think any of us are super expecting Zach Wheeler to take home the NL Cy Young, but he is up for it. Bryce,
we're not,
Bryce
I don't think we're even prepping a Zach Wheeler Cy Young post.
No,
I don't think we're doing that.
I don't think so. But still, cool that he even was good enough to be considered. Harper's got a pretty good shot at being the NL MVP, which is, it's still pretty crazy. Like, that is, I'll get, I think, a little bit of a thrill about a Phillies player winning the MVP. I think a little bit. But, you know, again, this is what we're settling for this year because the team couldn't put it together. But it is the off season and the team is putting together something, or will be putting together a plan, and we kind of got a glimpse at what the plan was to fill the various needs the Phillies have, which are numerous, in an article by Matt Gelb in The Athletic, and some further information about Jim Salisbury as well, just because Dave Dombrowski gave some statements about the Phillies' plans for the offseason. And he, of course, listed what we already know, like the Phillies' areas of need. They need a left fielder. They need a center fielder. They need a leadoff hitter. They need a big bat to protect Bryce Harper in the lineup. They need a closer. They need more bullpen pitching. You know, and people keep bringing up a starter, but that doesn't usually make it onto the lists because they don't really need a starter. They could use one if they made, like, so if they acquired a starter who was significant, I don't think people would be like, oh, why did they do that? It would be like, well, because, you know, they could use the help. But right now, there's just too many things in front of that right now. And what Dombrowski seemed to indicate was that I'll get your read on what he said in a second here. But he really played up. The impression I got was that left field and center field are going to come from deals, either free agency or potentially a trade. I feel like they're going to be people we recognize, you know, maybe not the hottest people on the market. I don't think we're in the big shortstop conversation that's going on this offseason. Somebody like Nick Castellanos, which I know people are excited about, that I think that's a possibility. John Heyman, who I think we're going to see throwing the Phillies in, as I've said before, into every rumor he's got because they have so many needs. Like, he'll say something like he did today where it's like, the Phillies are interested in Starling Marte, the top center fielder on the market. Many in on him, but this is one of the better fits. But then he'll also say something like, Brian Reynolds is a center fielder. And he called him a two-way player, but that's a football term. He brought up Brian Reynolds of the Pirates, and the price tag on Pirate star center fielder Brian Reynolds is thought astronomical. It probably should be. Outstanding two-way player with years to go before free agency. And then he'll just throw in, like, Yankees, Marlins, Phillies, and many others looking at center fielders. So, like, you know, linking them but not linking them, just being like, whoa, this team needs the position that this guy plays, so I'll just mention that again. So you're going to find the Phillies and I think a lot of tweets like that this year. But my point being that I feel like those guys are obviously going to come from outside of the organization, your left fielder, your center fielder. And I honestly think with those two new guys, you're going to get your big bat and you're going to get your leadoff hitter. I think that they think Bryson Stott is going to play some shortstop this year. I think that is potentially part of their plan. I'm sure Didi Gregorius is going to play some shortstop this year as well. And they already said Alec Bohm's going to be their third baseman. And Dombrowski really kind of, he really emphasized the closer. And I don't know if it was surprising. I guess it was a little surprising to me, not for any real reason, just because I tend to not prioritize closers, and then I complain about how there isn't a good one for, you know, the entire season. But he did seem to hit on that specifically and emphatically, that like this team needs a closer and he's going to find one.
Because they do need a closer.
They absolutely
do. I support this 100% because they've been nipping around the edges of the closer market for the past several years. The only way they're going to fix the bullpen is by actually spending money on it. So go out and get a closer. If he's bad, then he's bad. But at least you spend some money on him, and the chances are better that he would be good.
So who fits that description then? Are we talking about like a Kenley Jansen
who's been projected?
Yeah,
I wouldn't be upset at Kenley Jansen.
He got that heart issue
fixed, and he's like amazing still.
I think either the New York Post or Jim Bowden's Best Fits. You know, these are the projections we got to deal with this early in the offseason. But they were linking. Michael Conforto has been linked twice, I think, with the Phillies. People love putting him in Philadelphia, and Kenley Jansen has also been you know informally linked as well in these like projections that have come out. Those are the two players I've seen in these lists of like which team, which free agent will go to which team. Those are the two players that I've seen, you know, people think are going to go to the Phillies. I don't think Michael Conforto needs to be on the Phillies.
No, he does not. No. No.
Yeah.
No.
I refuse.
No.
And as Andrew Baggerly, the Giants writer, informed us, apparently on MLB Network, he mentioned that Chris Bryant is unlikely to come back to San Francisco. And apparently the Giants weren't very impressed with him, which is very interesting. Baggerly apparently noted that his swing won't age well, and the Giants were especially not impressed with Bryant's defense. What are your thoughts here?
Andrew Baggerly, I just sent you this tweet, replied to the guy who tweeted that and said, "This sounds harsher than I meant." It sounded harsh. That sounds a bit harsher than my intention. He says, "They were happy with what he contributed. No, he's a star player, but aspects of his game definitely underwhelmed." Like, that is essentially what he said.
That's
essentially what the first tweet said.
Still kind of harsh to have out there as, and like if you're the Giants, you're like, oh well, I guess how we really felt is out there.
This is so specific. This is clearly something he heard, that Baggerly heard directly from someone who would know. It's hilarious to me.
That's very funny.
And that he rushed that they would do that.
He rushed to do damage control as
well.
It was like, no, hang on a sec.
The Giants are going to be so angry at me. Oh, no.
Chris Bryant, I mean, he saw some drop-off going from the Cubs to the Giants, and it wasn't really like an even split either. He played 93 games with the Cubs and then went to San Francisco for 51 games as they were headed to the postseason. He hit .262 with a .788 OPS in San Francisco. That's a bit of a drop-off. He hit .267 with an .861 OPS in Chicago. His slugging numbers were up when he was still a Cub. His on-base numbers were in the same ballpark, I would say. But I look to Chris Bryant, and I've brought him up as somebody I think would be also a good fit for the Phillies because of his versatility and because of the high level he's able to produce despite that versatility. And high level with versatility, I feel like you can make an exception that like this guy doesn't have to have the highest numbers in the league. If he's putting up good to very good numbers and helping you out at first, third, and the outfield, I mean, he's doing his job. Like, I would be happy with that. He wouldn't have to have an all-star season in Philadelphia, you know, to fill that kind of role. They've been looking for a guy like that for years now. And so having somebody come in who's, like, able to do that, who even, like, you know, knows how to be in the postseason. None of the Phillies, none of the current Phillies have been to the World Series, as was noted this week by, I forget who, maybe it was Jim Salisbury.
Oh, wow.
But yeah, that was noted. There's not a single World Series veteran on the Phillies roster. So just, you know, somebody with any kind of experience there would be probably pretty cool to have as well, you know, as an added bonus. Probably not what you're prioritizing, but, you know. So yeah, I'm still kind of like, Bryant's a good fit. Marte, I feel like Marte, if you're setting him up with a multi-year deal, I don't know. The first year will probably be pretty good. But, I mean, you know, the guy's 32 years old. Yeah, I'm not saying that's there's a cutoff age-wise of productivity. But, you know, also we have all been watching baseball our whole lives. We know what happens as players age and, you know, things change. But Marte did, he did have a pretty solid year going from Miami to Oakland. He hit .310 with an .841 OPS, 12 home runs, 27 doubles. I mean, you know, that's a guy the Phillies have not had either. You know, it would be cool to see him in center field. I'm just thinking about like the longer term deal they would probably have to sign him to.
Yeah, I mean, I can't disagree with that. I feel like it's sort of like why we don't want Conforto. Like we know we've had experience with some of these types of guys. Like, let's not get burned again. Let's try something different. Let's try players that are more dependably good.
How do you feel about Kyle Schwarber? He was linked to the Phillies, I think, a couple weeks ago.
I don't know. Like, I can see a world in which I'm happy, but I can also see a world in which I'm like, hey, why?
I think a lot of these guys that have been, that the Phillies have been, you know, put next to in a rumor, if for left field are guys that require you to get a fast ground covering center fielder, like the left field position. And that's what I mean. Like, I think that's where the big bat to help Bryce out is going to come from. And Schwarber's certainly got a big bat. And then so does Castellanos, but neither of those guys are really noted for their defensive prowess. But then, you know, then you have the option of like a Starling Marte or, and I know people love Byron Buxton, but that'd be via trade, right? He's not a free agent.
Yeah,
that's a trade. Yeah, so like, and again, I don't know. I don't know how likely it is the Phillies pull off a significant trade. I feel like that they may be leaning away from that and more so towards free agency to fill some of these holes. So, yeah, I mean, that's kind of where we're at player wise. Am I missing anything? Did I forget anything that like player wise, free agency, and everything the Phillies are currently talking about as the GM meetings get underway? Where are the GM meetings this year?
That's a good question. This is, I think, the first one that's been in person for, I don't think they met in person last year.
Yeah, I think you're right. Well, yeah, obviously the ball is rolling. Labor negotiations are going to impact that. I think we also saw a John Heyman tweet earlier this week where, what did they say? Like, he talked to an executive who was like, things are as worse as I've ever seen. And you're like, ah. I mean, it wasn't like super surprising to learn that, but it was also like, well, it sucks that we had to get that confirmed. Like that's a bummer, but also necessary and inevitable.
Yes.
Obviously we're going to rely on Liz to break that down when it comes to a head, but the news of the evening, as I'm sure you saw, Liz, was Anirudh Kalambi of the Tampa Bay Rays coming to Philadelphia. Liz, the Phillies signed someone from an executive from the Rays to be an assistant general manager. Everything is fixed. Flowers, flower petals are just falling from the sky as we dance in the streets. A Rays executive. We are geniuses again. Hooray, hooray.
Hooray.
I'm done mocking everyone's reaction to the, I was laughing at everyone's reaction. Was like, we got someone from the Rays. I was like,
wait,
yeah,
people were
good.
Actually reacting like that? I have not been on Twitter all afternoon and evening, so I'm uneducated about this. People are legitimately saying everything is fixed. This is excellent. Like,
no one has said everything is fixed. That's me mocking people.
Okay,
and I get. I mean, look, the Rays have the reputation they have, and everyone's been saying like, why can't we get more people from the Rays? Well, the Phillies signed they plucked a relief pitcher off waivers from the Rays. Now they've got one of their executives, so clearly they're listening. And also, yeah, it's not a bad idea. It's just funny how we have just become so, like, we the way we think of the Rays is that they're just this hallowed like religious artifact, and when a piece falls off, we just grab it and we're like, "Yeah, I'm one of the chosen ones. I'm one of them now. Hooray!" And,
it's sort of like they're running like a school where, you know, they're just the farm system for, they just turn into the farm system for every desperate club. Like the Rays are just producing, you know, executive after executive, and they're just going out into the world to these terrible teams, and God knows if they even make them better. It could just be a giant ruse.
Yeah, I mean, who the hell knows?
But we're gonna find out here.
We're gonna find out what Colombia has to offer. This is a guy who has pretty much worked at like the intersection of sports, media, and data throughout his whole career since like 2013. He was a marketing intern for a company called Digital Divide Data that, according to their website, their whole thing is providing like tech skills and sustainable skills and employment opportunity to underserved areas of the world in Asia and Africa. And they've been doing this for like 20 years now. So like, you know, it's one of those, you don't get a full idea of like, okay, but what exactly do you do from their website? But it's the general idea. And he was a marketing intern for them before he was a baseball research and development intern for the Rays. So Liz, you were talking about when we were asked the question, what non-player personnel you'd like to see back with the Phillies today. And you said David Montgomery. And part of the reason that we hold him in such high regard and we feel like he has the perspective he had was he started as a, you know, selling tickets for the Phillies and then was eventually in charge of the team. And if that's the story that appeals to you, Anirudh Kalambi started as an intern with the Baseball Research and Development Department in Tampa in 2015, worked his way up to an assistant in that same department, worked his way up to an analyst in predictive modeling, and then worked his way up to assistant director of Baseball Research and Development. And now he's an assistant general manager just with another team. He'd been in that previous position for a little over 3 years.
Oh,
and
all right.
As I mock people for celebrating the hiring of a Ray, I think what I'm mocking is that it's the Rays, and nobody had any idea who this guy was when his hiring was announced. They were just like, oh, Rays, perfect. And the truth is, the Tampa Bay Times was giving Colombi a lot of credit for the Rays bullpen and constructing it this past year. About three quarters of the way through the season, the Tampa Bay Times was saying that, but like him and his department, as well as Kevin Ibach, the chief of professional personnel and scouting, they were crediting them for putting together this roster, this bullpen. Thanks to the baseball research and development crew, they had developed this bullpen that had some of the best numbers at this point in the season. And the story came out 125 games into the season, and the Tampa Bay Times noted the Rays have an American League leading 77-48 record and a 3.05 bullpen ERA, which is, boy, having followed the Phillies for the last few years, is simply staggering. But Eric Neander, the general manager, said that they routinely preach the importance of depth and securing talent, the best possible talent for all the different levels of opportunity that we have going into a season, during the season, whatever it may be. And, you know, that's something I feel like you could hear any team say. But then you look at the results the Rays get, and that the Times was calling out the guy the Phillies just hired by name as helping them secure some of the, like, scout the pitchers they filled out their bullpen with. I mean, and their bullpen specifically. I was like especially interested in the fact that, you know, it wasn't just like, oh, he's very good at you know, scouting or, you know, helping to develop or analyzing, you know, players. It was specifically the bullpen he was being credited with helping to construct, and that's an area where the Phillies have obviously needed some help the past few years. So, yeah, I feel like this is good news. You know, as much as I was laughing, this is good news. It is. It's just I think as we get to know our new assistant GM here in Philadelphia a little more over the next couple weeks, I think people are going to get even more excited because he did some pretty major things for an area of need of the Phillies with a team that got really good at it.
Yeah, I mean, I mean, how much more are we going to find out about him? How much do we really hear from the AGMs? I mean, Sam Fold gave a quote about this, and when I read that, I'm like, oh yeah, Sam Fold's the GM. Like, where have they been keeping him? Remember when it's obvious how the balance of power has shifted, because Rupert Amaro was the grand poobah of everyone. You know, yeah. he would, you couldn't keep him off. He was the Dombrowski. You couldn't keep him off the screens. And now every time Sam Fuld speaks, I'm like, oh yeah, Sam Fuld. He's around.
Yeah, he's sometimes Dave Dombrowski like opens his suit jacket and Sam Fuld just his little head pops right out of his pocket. And he's like, well, okay, I'll give a statement. That's terrible.
No, then he jumps out and he just grows right in front of you. He's magic.
Right.
Unfortunately, yes. None of his magic is related to talent acquisition or identification for the Phillies, but he can do that neat shrinking trick.
Yeah, and not yet. And also, even if it isn't totally, then that's why you hire a guy like Colombi, because as this article notes, the Rays got some big contributions from guys who were overlooked or let go of by other teams, which is exactly what we're talking about. I know John has specifically hammered the idea that like anytime a team like the Rays is like letting a guy go, putting a guy out on waivers, the Phillies have to be on top of that because the Rays saw something that was there. And apparently we just live in an age where if the Rays saw something, then chances are everybody else missed it and it's significant. But guys like Lewis Head, Matt Whistler, Adam Conley, Sean Armstrong, Head was considering, like, he thought baseball was over for him, according to this, that he was a solar panel salesman in Arizona. And Whistler, who was, he had been DFA'd by the Giants. Conley was supposed to go to Japan and then didn't. Armstrong had been relegated to the minor leagues by the freaking Orioles. Like, they found guys everywhere. And those aren't names that I really, you know, remember seeing too much of. So it wasn't like they were like a hot item or a trendy item or just anybody was really looking at too hard. And that's very encouraging to me, because that's wherever the Phillies have been looking to find effective relievers, they have not found them. What worries me is that effective relievers come here and then start to suck. But, you know, if you have enough of them, maybe you can just outpace the general hex that sits above the Phillies' bullpen at Citizens Bank Park.
I think part of what they're doing is to fix the problem that happens between a player getting here and a player sucking. Because they've traded for good relievers. Brandon Workman was good before he got to Philadelphia, and I think he was good after he left.
I don't know if I'd go that way. He was certainly not as bad after he left and went. Where the hell did he go? I was gonna say, where did he go? I was gonna say the Red Sox, but they wouldn't have taken him back after that. Workman went to the he went to the Red Sox. He went to the Cubs and then the Red Sox, and in neither case did he do too well.
Okay,
fortunately.
I mean, he was good before he got there.
The reason the Phillies got him was because in 2019 he had a tremendous year, and in 2020 he seemed to be scuffling, and the Phillies thought sometimes you can pick up a guy like that where his ceiling is way higher, and we can just scoop him up and you know they get better just being in a new scenery with a new team, and in this scenario we can be that team, and they weren't, and they aren't so far.
I completely forgot about that part of the narrative, because I was going to say there is something that happens to players that come to Philadelphia. It seems whatever side that they were suppressing tends to come back out. If they were good before, now it's out and it's out to stay.
Want to deal with your problems head on? Come to the Phillies.
Come to the Phillies. You won't be able to get over them, but you'll certainly be dealing with them.
We're not going to fix your
problems.
We're not
going to help you in any way.
We can identify them when they, you know, appear in front of everyone. You know, we can help with that. But yeah, no, we're not going to fix your problems. That's what are you?
Yes.
This is a baseball team. We don't do that.
Because you have to wonder if those Rays bullpen guys were picked up, were identified by the Phillies and started pitching for them, would they have been as good? Because there's a second part to just picking a dude up. There's having a plan, and you know, all of the stuff that the Phillies have not been able to do over the past few years, have a coherent plan for anyone, everyone being on the same page at the same time. Like, those things matter. And so I'm excited that the talent acquisition part of this equation seems like it is going to get a bit better, which is very encouraging. So we just have to hope that they're either good enough that the Phillies can't screw with them too much, or the Phillies figure out that part of the equation as well.
When you read about a problem as comprehensive as the ones illustrated by the Matt Gelb article that showed how dysfunctional the talent evaluation and development department of the Phillies was, the only thing you can want as a fan is change. Like, you know what I mean? Like, if nothing changes, then why be encouraged about anything that's happening on, like, the player acquisition level? Because apparently we're rotten at the core. So when I see hires like this, I'm very encouraged because it means, okay, we're not just sitting here looking at each other going like, well, there's too many politics in play. There's too much bureaucracy here. Nobody's motivated to do anything to like make the changes or we're too embarrassed to like move this guy after we hired him. Like anything, whatever's going on behind the scenes of a broken system. You know, you can sit, some teams, organizations, you know, they can sit on that for as long as they want and not fix it. And at least this, you know, this is an indication the Phillies are like, okay, we have problems. We got to make some significant changes. This is one guy. And just because he's from the Rays doesn't mean he's a savior. But that being said, he seems like he fits the bill for exactly what the Phillies want. He was climbing the ladder in one of the strongest organizations in this department. And now he climbed it another rung, but climbed it straight into Philadelphia. So like that, I think, is good news. It's at least like a problem is getting addressed. But like I said, it is just one guy. And we're talking about what we read about earlier, you know, a couple months ago, was a broken system.
So yeah, organization-wide failure.
You're absolutely right that, like, you know, there needs to be a plan, and I think there is one. I think what you're hearing, at least we're being convinced. You know, there's an attempt to convince us that there is a plan, and I'm buying into it because, you know, whatever.
Dave Dombrowski is saying things as being connected to action,
right?
Like, and that's what we want, because for the past year, Dave Dombrowski has just been saying things, and then that was it. There really wasn't a whole lot to go along with it. So now, you know, the great man is finally getting to work. So let's get to work.
Boy, our theory
get to work
that,
and make this damn team better, please.
Our theory that 2021 was an observation year got pretty much confirmed.
I know. We've been saying that the whole time. It's the gap year. He's just hanging around.
Yeah, what did he say specifically? I know I like screen capped it and threw it at you and John and was just like, bah, ha, ha, ah. I was right, but I mean, he basically.
Wait, both of you have been saying this the whole time too.
I'm paraphrasing, but like he basically was saying, he was using this year to like familiarize himself with the organization. You know, when you come in and you aren't really intimately familiar with like the ins and outs of a particular organization, you got to take some time and get to know it a little. And that, you know, that's a rough year to have to make additions at midseason because the team is sort of contending, but nobody really believes that they are. But you know, and I'm not excusing. What was driving me crazy was that, like, you know, the Phillies just couldn't admit it. Like, even if they had wanted to, they couldn't have admitted, like, we're not really gonna this is just kind of a letting Dave get acclimated kind of year. What the story said was there are certain benefits that come with perspective, and Dave Dombrowski has decades worth of it as a high-ranking executive, but what he lacked that winter was an intimate knowledge of the organization he'd inherited. And then it goes on, like he says, some quotes in the story by Matt Gelb where he's pretty much saying what I'm saying, that he needed to get familiar with the organization. I don't know. I mean, is this, I guess what I never really concluded was, is that such a bad thing? It's an irritating thing because the Phillies have taken so many steps backwards when we feel like they've been on the cusp of being a contender again for about 3 years. But McPhail and Klentak come in and Kapler comes in and then Kapler goes out and Klentak gets reassigned and McPhail's like, what am I, you know, when his deal's done, he's pretty much out the door.
Which
so that was
any
like
day now, if not like the beginning of November, actually.
That regime is like, you know, it didn't work out. The next guy's here. We wouldn't have wanted those guys to still be in charge right now. So if you're saying there needs to be a change there, then you also do need to allow for, you know, some orientation for the person who came in. Again, it's annoying to have to sit there and assume someone's just kind of like, well, I'm not going to do anything crazy this year because I don't really know what's going on. But once I know a little more, then I'm going to start being a little more aggressive as my reputation dictates. Like, that's annoying to have to be at that point when the rebuild technically ended. I would say at least you could say at Bryce Harper being signed. But are we also, I mean, isn't it kind of to be expected? Like, the change had to happen. Dombrowski had to come here. Someone had to fill that role because the other people weren't getting it done. And then you have to allow for that person to get acclimated. So how upset are we that that's pretty much what this year was?
It was frustrating, especially considering the season that Bryce Harper had, but it was necessary. It was necessary because the previous regime fucked everything up so bad. And that's just the plain truth. It's just a plain truth that the rebuild, you know, we had to sacrifice another year to the rebuild gods when none of us really wanted to. Like, the Phillies aren't in a rebuild, but we're just still wasting years like we are.
Yeah, they just rebuild it into an average team.
Yes.
Rebuilt into an average team.
Which is fine, but it's not what we were promised. We were promised much better. And unfortunately, unlike other fan bases that have become conditioned to this, we're not those people.
We've tasted,
you know, we've been to the promised land and we've eaten the fruit there. It was pretty great. We want to come back, and we're not going to let you forget that. We're not going to become poor Pirates fans who are just, God, I can't imagine.
I mean, like, and that's the depth of the fuck up in Klentak not working out, and, you know, the McPhail era not working out, is that not only did we lose, like, you know, the 2-3 years those guys were running the show, but you miss out on this year because you have to apparently allow Dombrowski to figure things out. And while he's doing that, guess what? Bryce Harper's having maybe his last MVP season, and you may not get that again. There's absolutely no guarantee that you'll get that again. Look at Aaron Nola this year. We thought we had an all-star Cy Young candidate. Instead, we have a like number four starter who looked like crap most of the year. So, you know, you can't be, you do lose that. And yeah, I don't know. I guess what I'm saying is you can't blame Dombrowski for that. And you can blame his predecessors for not getting the job done, necessitating a change like this in the middle of what was supposed to be a contention window, and not only blowing it for like the next guy to come in and have to like spin his tires for a calendar year, but also the players who have to go out there and got to play baseball anyway. And some of them are going to play it really well, and next year they're not going to play it as well. So,
let's not forget, on top of this, Joe Girardi's contract is up this year and he has not been extended.
Darn.
I think they're going to have to. I know, darn. Because he was chosen before Dombrowski came to town. So I think he probably will want his own. He'll want his own guy. And he deserves his own guy because Joe Girardi clearly isn't the guy. We're just going to have to endure one more season like this.
Wow, that's good point. That's a good point. Do you feel like we're one manager away from the manager who will win the Phillies their next World Series title?
At this point, we have to be. If we're not, then it's never happening. That's the thing. We've been through some dudes now, and now we've got the guy that we want at the top, and and it's his job to make the right choice. The right choice at this point is the non-shitty choice. We want just... don't fuck this up. You can't. And the good news is that he's got a year. And because his contract is up at the end of the year, there's probably a reasonable, you know, a possibility that at some point he might get fired. Because if they're going to have to pay him through the end of the year no matter what, why not kick him out and find someone new if the Phillies get into an extended slump?
You know what I was just thinking? On hitting season, when we were asked, like, what non-player personnel would you like to see come back in a total fantasy world, not a, like, realistically. None of us even said in passing the name Charlie Manuel.
I know.
And that kind of sucks.
It's not that we don't love him, but part of what made him succeed is that he had a lot of dependence on his coaches and great relationships with them and a lot of trust. And he also had excellent raw material to work with.
Yeah, those and great instincts.
Exactly. Great pitchers.
I mean, he's a hitting professor as well.
Exactly. Like, he made a team that was good into a team that was great. And I think that's his strength. I don't know what he'd be able to do with this group of dudes.
Well, yeah,
can you imagine him managing Bryce Harper?
I can see
it
working.
I don't know if it would be terrible or funny or both.
I can see how it would work, and I can see how it wouldn't work. Like, I can see, like, I can see pictures in my head of like Bryce, like, throwing his arms around. Because, I mean, Charlie Manuel loves hitting, and yeah. Bryce Harper loves hitting and knows how to hit. So it's not like Charlie's even got to tinker with him or mess with him too much. He's just got to know him as a person and how to let him get as comfortable as possible so he can be as good as he is. And that, I think, is exactly what Charlie did. For his team. So in that way, the way that this team has, we've complained, seemed to have lacked identity and chemistry at times. Like, you just, you know, they don't seem like they don't like each other. I know there's like guys on the team who are friends and they celebrate and home run hat and all that. But just like, you know, a general sense of identity, motivation, that seems to have been lacking for long stretches over the past few years. And I'm not saying Charlie Manuel would have fixed that, but if there was anything Charlie Manuel was good at, well, it was hitting. But if there was another thing he was good at, it was making people comfortable and just kind of creating that cohesion in a locker room so that guys were comfortable. So I don't think that would be great. I bring that up because I was thinking, you know, my answer to that question was Mike Arbuckle, and you could probably draw some parallels to the role that Mike Arbuckle had in architecting the Phillies' success from the last golden era, and, you know, where Karambi's skills lie.
Like, yeah.
You know, he helped beef up where the Rays needed it, and he did so by getting creative, and he found a lot of answers for them. You know, it wasn't like he just got lucky once where they were like, well, Bob McClure has worked with Zach Greinke, so he's a good pitching coach. And you're like, well, he worked with a lot of pitchers. Most of them weren't Zach Greinke, I feel. But in this case, you know, you're looking at a guy who's had more than one success story and kind of fills that same role. He's like just in the middle of the organization, just looking for guys, and you won't probably know how successful he is at his job until a couple of years down the line. But anyway, that just popped into my head while we were talking. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk about a pair of Phillies. The Phillies will not be acquiring this offseason because they're out of baseball, mostly. actually, they're not. I think they're both specifically not. But in any case, what we've been doing on Continued Success, instead of going back in time 10 years and talking about the 2012 Phillies for no reason, we just have a jar we've called the Mason Jar, and inside the Mason Jar, named for Roger Mason, are a bunch of handwritten slips with Rebuild Era's Phillies names on them, and we're picking out two every week and just kind of talking about them, you know, looking into them, trying to find some information you may not know about them. Week one, we did AJ Burnett and
Phil Klein,
of course. Obviously, everyone knows Phil Klein. And this week, we've got Brock Stassi and Juan Nicasio. So we're going to get to that and tell you about those guys you definitely want to hear about right after this. Well, as the hot stove is heating up, Liz and I are going to spend this last segment of Continued Success talking to you about the players you want to hear about. That's right, Juan Nicasio and Brock Stassi.
Yeah. Yeah,
you know how good it is by emphatically Liz said you know, one word. Yeah,
I'm trying to remember. I think when Brock Stassi was called up, he was very emotional about it. Am I remembering the right dude?
Yes, that's part of his story. That's
yes,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. I am remembering that correctly. Yes, it's part of his story, and that's what I think of when I remember him, and that's about it.
Yes.
Like, I'm just my initial reactions. And Juan Nicasio, I'm just like, he was a reliever at some point, wasn't he? He was not very good.
He sure was.
He wasn't terribly great.
He came over in the Carlos Santana, Gene Segura, J.P. Crawford trade.
Oh, my God. All those names.
Mm-hmm.
Oh. I forget sometimes that Carlos Santana was on this team.
That was pretty much what I remembered about Stassi too. When I was looking at these two guys' names, I was like, I remember one thing about one of these guys. Nicasio, he joined the 2019 Phillies. For them, he had a 4.75 ERA in 47 games, 94 ERA plus, 2.14 strikeouts to walks. Bleh. You know, he was a Phillies reliever from this era. He debuted on May 28th, 2011 in his major league career for the Rockies. He pitched 7 innings, allowed 6 hits, 2 walks, and a run with only 2 strikeouts. Like A.J. Burnett last week, Nicasio was called to the majors to make a spot start because Jorge De La Rosa had a season-ending elbow injury. This happens a lot. He was 24 years old and used Ubaldo Jimenez as a translator. He also benefited from the Rockies exploding for 15 runs in a rout of the Cardinals 15-4. Nicasio was noted for shutting down the most vaunted offense in the league at that time. It was one of those starts from a total rando that a general narrative of, hey, maybe he'll stick around if he keeps pitching like that. You know, crushing the dreams of terrible pitchers who still think they have a shot at the big leagues for no reason. His first road start in San Francisco sucked, but he came back strong with a career-high 9 strikeouts in his third major league start, which came after manager Jim Tracy held a closed-door meeting to shriek at his team. What do you think? What do you, like, we can theoretically put it out there that Nicasio's great start was due to Jim Tracy's famous rallying techniques. I always wonder how these meetings go when they, like, close the door and they're like, to the reporters, they're like, the doors are closed, so you know it's serious. Like, what goes on back there? A scheduled screaming match? A stern talking to? A chance to go old school without the cameras around? How does this work with grown adults?
My guess is that it's just a cliche fest. Because we've watched enough athletes now to realize they all speak in cliches. And it's not because they're stupid. It's because that's just the language of sports, right? That's I'm really convinced by that because I've watched enough like post and you know post game NFL, you know, breathless quarterback, you know, receiver interviews, and they all use the same language. It's the same in baseball. I'm like, this is just how athletes talk. And so my assumption is that it's just everyone's trading cliches to figure out which one is the most intense and the most descriptive of how we want to feel and what we will be doing.
Yeah. Okay. That's fair. Man, that kind of ruins. I was hoping they were like, you know.
And then they all take their clothes off.
Doing the knife game between their fingers or like making somebody hold their hand up and throw darts at it. You know, that kind of stuff. Wouldn't that help? Wouldn't that rally you to win some baseball games? You know, horror.
How could it not?
Well, Jim Tracy's famous temper impacting his career or not, Nicasio and Yolish Chacin were credited with keeping the Rockies in the playoff picture in his debut season. Of course, Nicasio was humbled by the ancient evil of Yankee Stadium, where he pitched no-hit ball into the fifth, but he was playing too fast and loose with his counts, put a fastball where he shouldn't have, and Nick Swisher nailed him with a grand slam that cost the Rockies the lead and the game.
Womp womp.
But in general, he was viewed as a pleasant surprise for the Rockies that year, especially when he would do things like keep the ball down at Coors Field, warding off its well-known threats to pitchers, and kept the ball on the ground, where balls don't typically leave the ballpark. He was the latest promising young starter to be able to get outs in Denver, and the Rockies started making plans until August 5th, when Nicasio was butchered by baseball, literally. This is a tough story, and I forgot that, like, I probably knew about this at some point. You're going to be the same way, because this is kind of like the defining moment of his career, and it's not good. Ian Desmond cracked a hard liner that hit Nicasio in the head.
Yeah, the following as you mentioned Ian Desmond, like, oh no.
Yeah, it was one of those really, really bad ones when the manager doesn't speak above a whisper in the press conference. Nicasio actually broke vertebrae in his neck when he hit the ground, too. Before he was even on the stretcher, though, he was blinking, he was moving his limbs, but this happened in the second inning of this game, and Troy Tulowitzki was pretty adamant that it was difficult to pay attention and focus on the game after this happened. And he could, like, all the players kept asking, like, coaches and trainers, like, what's going on? Is he okay? Like, what's happening now? And there weren't a lot of answers at that point. He had emergency surgery. He had the damage repaired and a metal plate inserted into the back of his neck. And later, Nicasio said he never lost consciousness. He heard his neck crack.
Oh, God.
Yeah. Yeah. And he was gripped by fear, he said, as the doctors had prepped him for surgery. All this according to AP reports. And yeah, he was fully awake. He said, well, that was happening. And he was like, not sure if he was going to walk again. Somehow he was back in the dugout 11 days later. What? In a neck brace. 11 days to the delight of his teammates. They were so happy.
He was just wearing a neck brace and a uniform, just sitting there. Hey, guys.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, I have to say, today, if that happened to someone today and it was that serious, a hit in the head, they might suspend the game.
Yeah.
I think we're getting close to a point where that happens more routinely, at least because of the increased, you know, focus on mental health all around, because it is not healthy to make, you know, to make them play immediately. Like when that soccer player this summer collapsed and completely like died on the field due to some kind of heart issue. They
Phillies
suspended the game.
That.
Yes, you're right. Yes. You know, you have to, like, unfortunately, the game was not postponed. The soccer game was not postponed till the next day. They came back and played a few hours later. But they're not like, all right, well, you just watched your teammate die in the field. Get back out there. Let's go. That's just inappropriate.
Daniel Brito was his name. The Phillies prospect who collapsed during the first game of a doubleheader in early August this year.
And I think he might have just recently been released from the hospital.
Yeah, they released the Phillies put out I remember it was a positive statement. He had still a ways to go, they said, but like everyone was very encouraged by his progress. So that was great. Nicasio, he did physical therapy and trained in the Dominican Republic over the winter and came back ready to pitch until June 1st of the following season when he took a step to field a ground ball and injured his knee, which didn't respond to fluid removal and required season-ending arthroscopic surgery. I mean, this guy, he was just getting hammered, like, nonstop. And after such, like, a promising start, it's impossible to believe that these incidents, especially, obviously, the line drive, didn't impact the rest of his career in some way, shape, or form.
Absolutely.
You know?
Yeah, I mean, how could it not?
Exactly. So he came back again in 2013 and 2014, and it became apparent that with significant playing time, Nicasio just wasn't putting up the numbers to get a permanent spot on the staff. He wound up getting traded to the Dodgers before becoming a free agent. He signed with the Pirates, was allowed to float over the waiver wire, and that's where the Phillies found him on August 31st, 2017. Then they traded him several days later, less than a week later. They picked him up and traded him to the Cardinals for a minor league pitcher, so unknown we won't even be covering him on this podcast. Once again, Nicasio became a free agent, got picked up by the Mariners, and while waiting in the stable for the Jerry DePoto trade alert klaxon to blare, he was once more sent to the Phillies in the deal that sent J.P. Crawford and Carlos Santana to Seattle for Gene Segura and James Pesos.
No longer would he have to wonder what might have been.
Oh, but Seattle, a city of champions. Oh, that's me. That's me.
That's depressing.
Nicasio was obviously not the headliner in that trade, but you know how people like to talk up the peripheral players as well so that the whole trade is more exciting or more of a win for their team. But Nicasio had been at least kind of struggling since he'd returned from injury years ago, and 2018 hadn't been particularly cool. He was viewed as a specialist to be deployed against right-handed hitters. It wasn't interesting. It just was what it was. On June 8th, 2019, the Phillies led the East by 2 games, and Matt Klentak was asked how the team could hold on to this success. He pointed out that a key part of his plans were to rely on the absolutely not guaranteed success of players he did and didn't even acquire.
Oh, God. The flashbacks.
I'll just read this entire quote.
Oh, God.
It's a real opportunity for some guys to step up. I won't do the voice. If you go back and look at recent baseball history, and even not so recent baseball history, at good teams, almost every year one of those teams has somebody that steps up and that maybe was not on the radar on opening day. In the outfield the other day, we had Jay Bruce, who wasn't even on the team a few days earlier, and Adam Haseley, who was not projected to be in the lineup in early June, coming up big for us. And I think this is an opportunity in the bullpen to see what Vince Velasquez could do. Can he lock down the eighth inning with a one-run lead? Can J.D. Hammer step up? Can Jose Alvarez and Juan Nicasio
continue? Why are you asking these questions?
This is the GM. Can they? I don't know. You acquired them.
Jesus Christ on a cracker.
Yeah, I mean, he's making a point. I get what he's saying.
I know,
but
surprisingly long, say fewer words.
Surprisingly long-winded for a Matt Klentak quote.
You didn't say it in the voice, but that's how I heard it.
Maybe he just ate a pack of gummy bears before he started talking, and he was all on a sugar high.
What a ridiculous group of words that was.
That was from an article by Matt Breen in The Inquirer. So Nicasio missed some time near the end of the season due to rotator cuff tendonitis. But this guy. But his season was regular usage was defined by somewhat like monthly 3-day struggle periods. Like, it doesn't look like a lot on a game log, but it's all a reliever needs to drift into ineffective territory. Like, he had 4 batches of his season that you could probably point to as like the worst parts. 8 earned runs in 4 games. Another batch was 6 earned runs in 3 games. Another one was 8 in 4 again. And then he kind of got into trouble with 5 hits and 3 earned runs in 4 games. But like outside of those, you know, he was pitching. But I mean, that's like just the nature of an average pitcher. It's like some days you got it and then you don't have it and they're seeing it and you're not in control of it. And I think that was his issue. He had some lingering command issues to deal with. Remember the brouhaha over Fernando Tatis Jr. hitting a grand slam in a game the Padres won by 10 runs?
Yeah.
How he got yacked at by Eric Hosmer in the dugout and rebuked by his own manager, Jace Tingler, for an unwritten rules violation?
So fucking stupid. Yeah, I remember that.
The pitcher that gave up that grand slam? Juan Nicasio.
Here's the thing. If a pitcher gives it up, that's just tough shit, man. You guys got to take it. Like, what is he going to do? Not hit it? If he serves up a meatball that could go over the fence with 3 other dudes on base, it's disrespectful not to make him pay. Honestly, if you're going to be that bad, you better be prepared.
Yeah, this was, this was August 17th, 2020. He pitched in 1/3 of an inning that day. It was one of 2 appearances he had for the Rangers that season. And the other one was, so he pitched 1 1/3 inning that year, finished with a 40-50 ERA. Just clearly not the Rangers passed. They passed in a hurry. So poor Juan Nicasio there, but hey, he recovered from a devastating injury that just sounds absolutely harrowing. And I had, I had forgotten that had been a large part of his experience earlier in his career. So that he was even out there still occasionally getting outs for the Phillies was a huge accomplishment in and of itself. So, why we're doing this, for the personal victories. Obviously, the Phillies didn't have a lot of victories in this case, but the personal victories are important too.
Yes, they are. And hey, he made almost $30 million in his career. He's doing fine. Woo!
Oh, okay. Yeah, he's all right. He's great.
He's doing fine. I mean,
all right.
He got, you know how much he got paid for those 2 terrible games in total?
Yes, I would.
$100,000. Like, he got paid $100,000 to give up all those runs. It's a beautiful thing. God bless baseball. Because you know what? The man came to work that day and he deserved to be paid.
Yeah, hey, it's the beautiful game, as they say.
Indeed.
And that's for that reason. Brock Stassi. I know they don't say that. Brock Stassi. Our other Philly from the rebuild era Phillies. As Liz said, we both remember him from the emotional response to being told that he had made the Major League roster, something that was a huge deal. The Phillies drafted Stassi in the 33rd round of the 2011 draft as a left-handed pitcher. By the time he'd been sent to Williamsport, he was a first baseman. He's played at every level of the Phillies farm system, the Venezuelan League, Mexican League, Puerto Rican League. In 2021, according to Baseball Reference, Brock Stassi played a single game for the Phillies team in the Florida Complex League, going 1-for-3 with a single. He might have been rehabbing. He finished the season playing in the Independent Atlantic League for the Long Island Ducks this past year. And as we learned very recently, Brock Stassi was in the Phillies organization this year. Played at Reading for a little bit after he had been, we'll find out his journey. Here's a little bit of his history, courtesy of Sam Donnellan in the Daily News. Each time Brock Stassi faded back to pass for his 7th grade football team, the opposing defense followed close behind. It was take the snap, Jim Stassi was saying over the phone, and run for your life. Football seemed like a good idea at the time. Brock Stassi was big enough, strong enough, had the kind of throwing arm even then that immediately thrust him into the quarterback position. I had watched it on TV and figured with those pads on, it probably wasn't going to hurt, the Phillies prospect recalled at his locker. I got hit and I was like, oh my gosh, what have I gotten myself into? And as the season went on, I got laid out over and over again. So I said, Dad, I don't want to play this anymore. And he said, no, you started this. You're going to finish this.
Healthy.
14 years. I thought this was comical because then
fuck
it goes 14.
You, son, you're going to finish this because I said so. It's like a. It's like when you smoke that, and when I made you smoke that pack of cigarettes, only this is the rest of your life.
14 years later, after getting laid out over and over again, both physically and psychologically, Brock Stassi is on the verge of making his first major league roster. I think my parents did the same thing for us. If we signed up for something and we didn't want to go anymore, they were like, "You finish out this season or whatever, and then you can stop, but you got to finish out what you committed to." And I do think that's good. But if I went to my parents and I said, I'm in physical pain put me in hell.
Yeah, I don't want to do this anymore because it hurts me. Yeah. It's not that I don't enjoy it because I don't enjoy it. I don't enjoy it because it's physically painful.
Right. I'm not saying this because I'd rather just be playing Xbox after school. I'm saying it because...
Ow.
Fucking ow. Like, ow. They would have been perfectly understanding.
Yeah.
This sounds like a lot of, honestly, I read a lot of accounts of like early accounts of athletes, of baseball players before they came up, like when they were kids. You see a lot of stories like this. There's a lot of dads, a lot of parents who, when they're telling the story later, it's about commitment and dedication and he loved the game and we built a batting cage in the backyard and he was out there every night and I was pitching to him every night. I mean, yeah, like that sounds cool, but I think everybody knew a bunch of kids growing up who had parents like that, and it wasn't always as rosy as it kind of gets painted when the kid turns out to be a professional athlete.
Yeah.
There's like hundreds of other kids, thousands of other kids who aren't the professional athlete that guy became, whose parents were just as demanding and like, no, you can't quit that thing. Because even in this case, it's not like the dad was like, okay, it hurts, but you can quit after next year. Oh, no, no. Dinellen even notes getting laid out physically and psychologically. Yeah. He had to keep playing all the years of high school.
You know, in the players that do have the talent, it fucks them up. Like Roy Halladay's dad was in a lot of ways that type of dad. He really pressured his son to play baseball, to be a pitcher. And it messes with you. It messes with you. So I'm not entirely surprised that Brock Stassi is still hanging around.
Well, later in the article, the dad says, why can't it be you? That's what I have told all three of my boys. I told them play until they tell you you can't play anymore. If that's what you want to do, he adds. But I'm just like, I don't know, man. I read an account about what your kids do and didn't want, and that wasn't the rule back then.
I love
apparently
that. Is play until you can't play anymore if that's what you want to do.
If that's what you want, that's what you want.
You know, no, that's none of them want to do that, but you've said it, so now they are.
He said,
great
I
job,
don't want
Dad.
The quote is literally, Dad, I don't want to do this. I don't want to play this anymore. And he was like, no. And then later in the article, he says, play until you can't, and if that's what you want. the contradiction just was, it was very, it stood out to me. That was
just stunning.
You remember Brock Stassi, as I said, because the spring of 2017 was his. Some fans latched on to a particular player, but it's when writers glom onto a guy that you're going to hear a lot about him. The writers loved Stassi that spring. He was everything they needed to get through the long and meaningless baseball games. He was this rando 33rd rounder having a terrific spring who could crack a big league roster at 27 years old. Because of his age and 6 years in the minors, Dinellen drew comparisons to Ryan Howard, Josh Donaldson, and Chris Sabo, pointing out, of course, that Howard and Donaldson had gone much higher in the draft and therefore had greater expectations. But he was just saying that, like, okay, this is a guy who dwelled in the minors for long, and now, like, this is his time. Like, they were kind of just banking on that. In 57 at-bats during 2017 spring training, Stassi hit .333 with 6 home runs. And when Pete Mackanin approached him, he simply asked him what number he'd prefer to wear on his Phillies uniform. And that's when Stassi got emotional, that's a very Pete Mackanin way to go about
that. Yeah, I mean, that's such an old school baseball kind of way to do it. Like, to sort of not make a big deal out of it and just sort of let it, you know, let the player realize it on his own, you know, on his own. I just love that. That's so, it feels like that's out of a movie, but it's not. It was Pete McCannon, who's the best manager the Phillies have had since Charlie Manuel. God damn, that's depressing.
Yeah, that's accurate. I don't even have to think too hard about it. No. To know that that's accurate.
I pulled that right off the top of my head, and I didn't even really have to check if I was right. I knew it was in my soul.
I mean, everyone is so mad at the other three guys, right? Sandberg, Kapler, and Girardi.
Yeah. Wow. Pete McCannon did his job and got told to leave a week before the season was over or something like
that. Yeah. Pete, you're no longer the interim manager. Oh, thank you. You're fired. Ah, that's a twist. I see. So Max Stassi, obviously Brock Stassi's brother, catcher for the Astros and the Astros organization, when his brother made the Phillies big league roster in 2017, Max tweeted out a list of everything Brock had been through to get to this point. The note reads, "I can't even begin to describe how happy, excited, thrilled I am for my older brother, Brock. He has truly earned everything to get to this point in his career. Everyone has heard some kind of cliche underdog story. Well, this isn't one of those. My brother, Brock, cut early in area code tryouts, didn't have a D1 offer until late in his senior year, was told he wasn't good enough to hit in college, didn't hit till junior year and won the batting title senior year, drafted late as a first baseman when the draft tracker said pitcher, it was an off-season substitute teacher, driving 50 miles each way after teaching, gave hitting lessons for 2 to 3 hours a night, sent to extended spring training at the age of 22, struggled a few years in minor leagues, made some adjustments to his swing, and now he's a big leaguer. Big leaguer. So, yeah, I mean, he, like, that is a journey. And that is why he became the story of the spring. Charlie Manuel liked what he saw as well. He said, Stassi knows how to play the game. Not only is he a good, very good first defensive baseman, he throws good and he's a good hitter. He can definitely get the big hit for you. Well, I wouldn't say Brockomania erupted across Philadelphia. Stassi hit 167 as a major leaguer in 90 plate appearances. His first real highlight came on April 10th after he'd gone hitless in his first four games when he crushed a home run against the Mets. That'll get you a soft spot in everybody's heart around here. Unfortunately, he was overshadowed by the Phillies losing their 27th game out of the last 39 against the Mets. And also in that game, Eduber Ramos was targeting Asdrubal Cabrera with a fastball, or at least, you know, people thought he was, and almost started a brawl. His next and final home run, Stassi that is, his next and final home run of his big league career was on April 29th, when on his first visit to Dodger Stadium ever, Stassi knocked a Brandon McCarthy pitch into the left field seats with two runners on base. Of course, the Phillies blew it in the ninth and lost. Ugh. Stassi was eventually sent down to the minors, then came back up, then was optioned back down. As the left-handed backup to Tommy Joseph at first, manager Pete McCannon pointed out how tough a job they were asking Stassi to take on. It's hard. I told him when he left, to ask you to do what we asked you to do is tough. That's why we have to get a bunch of old farts who know how to handle that situation. He's not accustomed to that, McCannon said. When I was in that role, 89 looked like 98 when you're not playing. It's a tough role, and I just wasn't able to get him enough playing time to stay sharp. Yeah, I mean, he's saying like pitchers were throwing, are throwing harder now.
Okay, there you go. I did not. I don't know why those numbers. Just like, what do those numbers mean?
No, no, he's not saying that. He's saying when you haven't been playing, a pitch that's not even, you know, that's not kind of regular fast is going to look a lot faster.
Oh yeah, I get that now. But when you were saying it, it didn't register. I'm like, why are there numbers in the middle of the sentence?
But I mean, again, this is another reason why Pete McCannon was so good, was because he was able to relate to he was the player's manager. He was. He was able to relate to what, like, especially the bench guys were going through, because that's the role he played. And he was, even as Stassi's getting sent down, McCann's like, look, I know exactly what you're going through, man. This sucks. Like, it's not crazy that you weren't able to succeed, because we weren't asking you to succeed. We were basically asking you to, you know, forget, you know, try to succeed without a rhythm. Like, that's just tough. Like, that's almost impossible to do. That's why guys who are good at it are so valuable.
That's why we're going to try it with a different player in a couple of years and ruin him forever.
Exactly. That's, you know, we got to ruin somebody. Stassi went to the Giants and Twins organizations, but never back to the majors. Unlike a lot of guys we're going to talk about, he's still playing. And as I said, he actually played for Reading as recently as July 2021. He'd suffer a season-ending wrist injury in 2019, according to Tom Housenick of The Morning Call. And when COVID shut everything down in 2020, he had to think about where he was going to fit when baseball came back. What he did was grab a job managing a college summer team, I think in the Cape Cod League, saying in his first time in such a role, he was emulating those he'd played under, like Dusty Wathan and Dave Brundage. He said because he was left-handed, he had no street cred with the middle infielders, but he did love he did love talking about an at-bat, the battle with the pitcher, what to expect and when, etc. So that's what he got up to when baseball, his career was sort of at a crossroads and baseball itself had melted away. But I thought that was interesting. It's always cool to see guys like slide into their first coaching role and, at a point where like the guys aren't really even that much younger than they are, but they're just kind of at that point in their career where they're, like, they want to be involved. Obviously they're baseball guys. And to see a guy thrive in a teaching role is always like, that's cool. I don't know. That's always very cool to me.
Yeah, I like that. That's a great story. I mean, listen, if he can still play, then good for him. Like, if that's what he wants to do, then do it. You're old enough that, you're making these decisions and, you'll live with them. If playing is what you want because your daddy told you to many years ago.
That you can't quit.
You can't quit. They have to literally tell you to quit. People will have to yell that to you from... from an office, from the field, fans on the street. If that's how you have to hear it, then I guess we'll just have to wait. I have nothing against Brock Stassi. That was so mean.
That's what we have on Juan Nicasio and Brock Stassi. I guess while I'm at it, I'll go ahead and grab the mason jar and pull next week's two names out.
That's exciting. Mm-hmm.
What do we got? All right.
What do we got?
First name out of the jar. Taylor Featherston.
Who the fuck is that?
God damn. He's a later one, I think.
I think so. It has to be.
And Reggie McClain.
Who are these two?
That's another. He's pretty recent, too. He's somebody. Chris Jones fell in love with him.
Oh, God. Chris has terrible taste. I know.
Yeah.
I love you, Chris.
Well, that'll do it for this episode of Continued Success. As always, don't forget to subscribe, rate, and download all your favorite podcasts that are part of the Good Fight podcast family, including Hit and Season with John Stolness, almost said Joe Stolness, The Dirty Inning with me and Dr. Trevor Strunk. We've got a new episode up right now. And head on over to the Patreon at patreon.com/hittandseason for extra bonus content all off season long. For $5 a month, you get access to Absolutely Hammered with me and Chris Jones. Got a new episode of that up. And Dirty Inning Hit and Run, which is when Trev and I expand on points made in the most recent full episode of The Dirty Inning, or just talk about something that interests us. We'll have an episode on Monday up about Buster Posey and his career playing against the Phillies. So, yay! And Liz and I will have a movie review up on the Patreon as well. We're going to talk about the movie 42, the Jackie Robinson biopic that came out a couple years ago. That'll do it for this episode of Continued Success. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you next time on the podcast that has the name I just said.